First of all, it's a big privilege to be here. Never been in Neve Yaakov before. We have a daughter who lives in Beit El, and we take the road to Beit El. And we see Neve Yaakov on the left when we're going there, and we've never been here. So this is a beautiful way to make the entry to Neve Yaakov. So, first of all, I'd just like to say, countdown to Rosh Hashanah. So we're all hopefully thinking about big things, how to try to make ourselves what we want to be, what we really want to be. And so I guess it's appropriate time. And Hashem should help us. Hashem should help us be what we want to be. It's appropriate time to... So I'll tell you our story, how we got here. I want to thank Rabbi Sklar and thank the Rabbanim for having us, and thank you for coming to the Beis Medrash. I'll tell you my story. It's mamish. By the time you hear it, you'll see it. It's unbelievable that I'm standing here. So you'll hear the story. I had the privilege writing three books. Rav Sholdov Miller, whose son is sitting right over here, was the editor of my second book. First book is called From Central Park to Sinai, How I Found My Jewish Soul. I don't know if you heard, there's a large city called New York. It's west of here. You have to go across the water. I'll tell you about it. It's a big city. New York. They have a place, Manhattan, in the center of New York. The middle of Manhattan is Central Park. And the east side of Central Park is Fifth Avenue. And that's where I grew up. I was always Fifth Avenue, right nearby. Fifth Avenue is known as an affluent street. It was, it is, and that's where we lived. We come from an affluent family. And I'm not just saying this for no reason. It's relevant to the story. My father passed away about a year and a half ago. An amazing, amazing person. He was nifter at the age of 107 and a half years old, and to the end, very bright, but even more amazing statistic, I think, than the 107 and a half, is I imagine that there is nobody in the entire Jewish world who put on tefillin for the first time in his life, probably in Jewish history, at a later age. My father put on tefillin for the first time in his life a week before his 105th birthday. That's pretty... Rabbi Sklar reminded me, I tell this story, a girl came up to my wife a few, you know, years ago, we were speaking at some college campus. I'm 22 years old. My whole life, like, I'm finished already. My whole life went past me. It's too late. I can't do anything. It's all over. 105 years old, my father put on tefillin. First time in his life. My father was a person with, say in Yiddish, no zitzfleisch. He dropped out of college. NYU, 1 year, that was it. Couldn't sit still. He was tennis champion of New York City in 1921. And he did various things. In 1924, he went to Paris. He decided he wanted to be an artist, a great artist. So he went to Paris, the cultural capital of the world, I guess you could say. And he, an amazing thing, he was an orphan at the age of 13. He goes to Paris. He can do anything he wanted in the world. He wants to be an artist. This is really unbelievable what happened. You know, he realized, I do not have the talent to be a great artist. I think it's a huge mile. I mean, to really understand, you know, what you're good at, what you're not good at, Hashem made everybody different. As someone said, you know, Hashem made the world in technicolor, created the world in technicolor. Everybody has a different niche, a different ability, a different set of a combination of abilities. Not, you know, my father realized I'm not going to be a great artist. Whoa. Once you start realizing what you're not good at, then you can figure out what I am good at. So what are the possibilities? You love art. Either you give up on the whole dream, or you become a mediocre artist. Whatever. You forget the whole thing. No, there's another possibility. How can I really do something? I love this. I love art. So he decided, I think I'm good at making money. I want to go and I want to go to Wall Street. I want to make enough money so I can support people, discover people who are great artists, and I'm going to support them. And that's how I'm going to achieve my dream. By the way, my father's name was Roy R. Neuberger. What's R, the middle initial R? Rothschild. And we did research. We found his mom is from the famous banking family, European banking family. And my father was, I'm not exaggerating, he was not a good businessman. He was a genius in business. Not, you know, I'll tell you how. So he goes back to New York in 1929. He wants to make money. What happened in 1929? September 1929, the stock market crashed. What does that mean? The Great Depression began. The stock market crashing means people, very wealthy people, literally committed suicide. They jumped out of windows. In a few days, they lost everything and their whole world collapsed. My father came to Wall Street 6 months before the crash, and he was a genius. And he smelled it. He knew it. He knew something was going to happen. So I don't know if there are any people in the room who are familiar with Wall Street terminology, but he was one of the pioneers of what's called hedging, short selling. In other words, usually when people buy a stock, they want it to go up, and they sell. They buy it low and they sell it high. What happens if the market crashes? So you lose. When you sell short, if the stock goes down, you win. My father figured out how to do this. And when the crash occurred, he didn't feel a thing. He was prepared. And he went through the whole depression, becoming more and more successful. 10 years later, he started his own Wall Street firm, which today still exists. It started with 5 people, and today it's thousands of people. And right away he started fulfilling his dream. He discovered looking for artists, and he supported them, and they became later famous artists. In fact, I will tell you that in 2007, my father was 104 years old. We went with him to the White House, and he was given the National Medal of the Arts by President Bush. The whole experience, unbelievable. I had a talk with President Bush, told him about Am Yisrael. I mean, Mamish, we talked 4 or 5 minutes, a long time with the President of the United States, and he listened. The unbelievable experience. But my father created the greatest collection of American art there is. Okay, he was a great businessman. He was this dreamer, this person who loved art. There was something else about my father. It's worth knowing. He was famous for what we call Evrit Shem Tov. He had a good name. he was, I mean, we all know, I don't read newspapers, but anyone who knows what's going on in the world, there's scandals all the time. In business, people cheat. Nebuch, it hurts, especially when it's a yid. Nebuch. My father had a reputation. His word was perfect. Anything he said, he did. And that's why people were willing to give him, besides being a genius in business, they're willing to give him their fortunes to manage and make money for them, because they knew they could trust him. And he was in Wall Street till he was 99. He used to walk to work when he was 99 years old. And he only stopped because he had surgery and he couldn't walk anymore. He couldn't, you know, make the walk anymore. He still walked, but he couldn't walk to work. So, what is that? 60 years. Incredible reputation. So that's the kind of home we grew up in. Idealistic parents. My mother, Allah Shalom, also totally different person. My mother's maiden name, by the way, my father was Rothschild. My mother's maiden name, Salant. My grandfather told me, when I was about 7 years old, we come from a famous rabbi, Israel Salanter. I didn't care, I didn't know what I would give to be able to, you know, go back to that moment and like, how, who, when, where, what. But that moment passed. But my mother, you'll hear what kind of life we live. But my mother was such a musterdicka person, unbelievable. She never let herself alone. She was never good enough in her own eyes. She was always criticizing herself, working on herself till her last day. An amazing woman, a woman of great accomplishment. Brilliant, accomplished great things. What a family, unbelievable. Three children. You okay, guys, back there? Thank you. Three children. I have an older sister, younger brother. I'm the middle child. You know, they say the little middle child's a little wacky sometimes. Okay, so that accounts for me. Anyway, beautiful family, interested in education, interested in making the world a better place, a family with values, and a family that had, you know, all the material things you need to live. Perfect. Lived on Fifth Avenue. I was driven to school every day in a chauffeured limousine. What more could you ask? Everything. Except one thing missing. One thing. Whatever word you want to use, Yiddishkeit, Torah, Jewishness, zero. Zero! What does zero mean? It's below one. Nothing. Nothing. What is nothing? I mean, obviously, every Jewish boy has a bris. Bar mitzvah goes without saying. No bris. No bar mitzvah. No Rosh Hashanah. No Yom Kippur. No Pesach. Not even Hanukkah. My favorite day of the year was December 25th, which we really did. We really did. Didn't know what a mezuzah was. Did not know what a mezuzah was. Forget having a mezuzah. We used to have our bread delivered by a Jewish bakery. I mean, it was an accident, you know, but they delivered Pector's Bakery. And on Friday, they would deliver this twisty bread. It was very good. I liked it very much, which we called Friday bread. Came on Friday. Never heard of challah. But who needs it? Who needs to be Jewish? You're living on Fifth Avenue. You have this wonderful family. You have all the money you could possibly need. Everything. Why be Jewish? Why? Who needs it? I'm sure everybody knows. Famous Gemara. What happens in the womb? Not just a physical growth. A malach comes, and that fetus growing in the womb, it's 9 month chavrusa. I mean, that's a chavrusa. No lunch breaks, no coffee breaks, nothing. 9 months. Kol HaTorah Kula, everything. What happens? We're born. We know birth is a shock. Bigger shock than we realize. That's a, they say the Malach hits us. Some people say, I forget if it's a Gemara or not, but people say this little ridge we have between our upper lip and our nose, is that's where the Malach hits us. The Malach hits us, we forget everything. Forget them. What's the point? 9 months! And we forget it all. What a waste. Unbelievable. We go into the world, we start getting all this information crammed into our heads, English, science, math, history. Oh, brain is crammed. What happens if we're fortunate enough to hear Divrei Torah, words that have come down from our Sinai thousands of years ago, from thousands of years? Wait a minute. Wait a minute. It's not like that other stuff I'm learning. I heard this before. Where did I hear this before? That's when we remember. That's when we remember what the Malach taught us in the womb. So I'm this kid. I'm growing up on Fifth Avenue. And something is so wrong. I can't breathe. And I want to tell you, I'm not exaggerating. I'm trying not to exaggerate. Try to tell it like it really happened. If I could really describe, and I try, I hope, how it really happened. I didn't have one moment of peace. Not one moment of peace. I couldn't breathe. My stomach hurt. Something's wrong. And I was scared. Every minute, I was scared. It's interesting to know, what was I scared of? Like, you have everything. This wonderful family, you know, you have a doorman at the, nobody can walk into the your apartment building, you're safe, you're protected. What am I scared of? I'll tell you what I was scared of. I was scared of myself. You know, start learning Torah. You all know, I was going to say, the concept of, it's not a concept, Yetzer Hara. I lived it. I never heard of the Yetzer Hara. But Yetzer Hara was right in front of me every second. I had this feeling. It's interesting. People think, you know, you can live without Torah. You cannot live without Torah. You cannot. It is impossible. Not for 1 second. I had this, like there's something there that's stronger than I am, and it's running me, it's controlling me. I can't do what I want to do. It's going to stop me. I want to do something, it's in my way. I can't. I didn't know what it was, but it was always there. And I was afraid I was going to do some like crazy thing, and I wouldn't be able to stop myself. That's pretty scary. You're a little kid, and then you begin to think, I'm crazy. I'm crazy. There's something wrong with me. I'm crazy. So you're 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. You're a little kid. How do you deal with that? Who do you go to talk to? Who do you talk to? You think your parents understand anything? So my mother did, because she was a Salanta. She was a Musardika person. She was full of Ruchnias. She didn't understand, but she could feel it. I had to do something, because how do you live this way? How do you live this way? And I asked, you know, you could ask the question really, like, okay, but isn't every Jew like this? You think I was the only one? I'm not the only one who lived like this. The whole chevra, the whole crowd we were with, then there were a whole. Everyone was like this. All the people I went to school, everybody. So how come I was so sensitive to it? I guess the answer is, you know, some people are more successful at maybe lying to themselves or pushing their perception of what's going on down and ignoring it. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. To this day, I can't do it. I had to find out. Like, how do you deal with this? How do you deal with it? Forget answers. I didn't even know what the question. What are the questions? What's going on? You have no idea. You're spinning it out of space. No control. You don't know where you are. You're upside down. You're inside out. What's wrong with me? So where did I go? I'll tell you. In Central Park of Sinai, I go through, you know, in great detail all the... Every place I try to look to get a way out of this. I'll give you a few. Give you an idea. I heard about something. I remember, I'm still a little kid. Heard about something called religion. Oh, okay. Maybe religion. I think religion is meant to deal with stuff like this. So I asked him, I want to learn about religion. So I went to a school called the Ethical Culture Schools. That's a whole drusha in itself, what it is. Bekitzer, it was founded by an Enlightenment Jew in Germany in the late 19th century. Came to America, founded this organization, the Ethical Culture Society. And basically the idea of it is a place where Jews can run who want to run away from Torah Nebuch, Chas HaShalom. But they did. And they founded a school. School still exists, a big school, so-called sophisticated private school. I went to the school. So the Sunday school, separate thing. What did we learn about? You can imagine the kind of thing we learned about. One Sunday, Catholicism. One Sunday, Protestantism, you know, Zoroastrianism, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Roman mythology, Greek mythology, one Sunday, you know, quote unquote, Judaism, whatever that is. Did it help? Of course it didn't help. So going to college and studying comparative religion, they do this, they do this, nobody believes anything. Just you're studying, it's information. No good. Didn't work. What else? I had to find answers. This wasn't a theory for me. This was breathing, living. I thought maybe great literature, the world's greatest literature, Homer, Chaucer, Shakespeare, Milton, these world-class authors, these guys have the secret, obviously. So beautiful. You study Hamlet. Oh, Shakespeare, a genius. He wrote Hamlet. You know Hamlet inside out, backwards, forwards, every word. Brilliant play, Hamlet, unbelievable. This Jewish kid. You know Hamlet, backward, forward, upside down. Can you live from Hamlet? Can you live from Hamlet? No way. No way. You can read it, you can study, it's genius. No way you can live from Hamlet. What else? Ah, nature. Beautiful. You go out in the woods and you can breathe. Ah, and you think society is so corrupt and it's so hypocritical, polluted in every way. Nature, beautiful, menuchas and nefesh, you can breathe. Ah, I used to hike a lot. After my senior year in high school, my friend and I spent the summer in Wyoming, in the Teton Wilderness area. 7 weeks in the wilderness. That was such wilderness that literally we saw more moose than people that summer. Beautiful, great. Oh, this is what I'm looking for. Does not work. Why? You can't run away from your neshama. You don't know what's going on. You have questions. You have thoughts. You have worries, and you have no distractions. You're out there in the wilderness. Believe me, then nobody even heard of cell phones. Newspapers, TV, movies, nothing. You're just thinking, and you have no answers. And like smoke comes out of your ears because you're totally frustrated. And I had a nightmare. What happens if Congress, in its wisdom, decides to revoke the wilderness status of the Teton Wilderness area? And I had this nightmare, 10,000 bulldozers are coming in, knocking down my beautiful paradise. They're building high-rise apartments. It's all over. No good. No good. Forget it. Doesn't work. In high school, when I was in high school, today we have a black president in America. So when I was in high school, there was the beginning of the civil rights movement, Dr. Martin Luther King, and we used to think, you know, justice for black people, and there was a chain of stores called Woolworths. They were accused of discriminating against blacks, and we used to picket them, and we're going to fix the world. Ah, this is something to live for. This is, you know, social justice. So I just want to say, I'm not making a social statement, yes, no, right, wrong. I'm not talking about that. All I'm saying is this, the Jewish kid picketing Woolworths doesn't work, doesn't fill up the vacuum. Doesn't do it. College, Vietnam War, peace movement will bring peace to the world, end the war. Beautiful. Not saying true, not true. That's not the point. I'm not making a social statement. A Jewish kid, peace movement does not fill up the vacuum. So I'm in high school. Co-ed high school, ethical culture school. I'm not going to go into great detail what happened, but I was a very shy kid. You know, you expected to be very socially adept with females, so on. I felt like I'm a nebuch. I'm weird. I'm not normal. I'm crazy. But kids, without going into great detail, I just want to tell you, Hashem made not a nes, but millions, an infinite number of nisim for me. Unbelievable. I met in high school my future wife. I was 16 years old. And Baruch Hashem, she's not here tonight, but we're privileged to go from that point on the journey together. Hashem saw this kid. Unbelievable. Sorry to use this lashon, but here's this kid spitting on the Torah. There's no God. I'm not Jewish. I have nothing to do with that stuff. That's all. And what's Hashem doing? Hashem is holding my hand. I don't even think he exists. Holding my hand. He's introducing my future wife. He's laying out a whole derech. Can you imagine 16-year-old kid totally rejecting everything Jewish? And what, a few decades later, he's standing here in Neve Yaakov. And how did this happen? You don't even see. You think Hashem doesn't exist, and he's just taking care of you. No matter what you think, he's holding your hand. He's there, laying out this whole derech for you. You don't even, and you have no clue. We started going out to high school, went to the University of Michigan, and after my second year there and her first year, we got married. As the saying goes, they lived happily ever after. Thank you very much for inviting me. But that is not the end of the story at all. Famous Vart. Again, I'm sure you've heard it. The word Ish has a Yud, Isha has a Hey. Yud and Hey together stand for Hashem. What does it tell us? Jewish, what's a Jewish marriage? Ish, Isha, and Hashem. You want to build a home with something, with Menuchas HaNefesh, Shalom Bayis, happiness, Simcha, Kedusha. You want to be able to raise children who not only learn Torah, but want to learn Torah, pass values down. You need help. Any relationship is hard. You need Hashem in your home. You need Hashem. How are you going to do it without help? You think you can do it yourself? No way. Take the Yud out of Ish. Take the hey out of Isha. You get Ish. What does Ish mean? Fire. We know what it meant. We were married a few years. What's fire? A word, an argument. Gets out of control. A little flame. The fire starts burning. And you can't control it. You don't have Hashem in your home. What are you going to do? You cannot control the fire. And it could burn the whole thing up. And that's what began to happen with us. After about 3 years of marriage, the whole thing looked like going up in smoke. Looks like it's all over. It reached a point. I remember the exact second. January 10th, 1966, 2 a.m. was a Monday morning, Ann Arbor, Michigan. I was in graduate school. I woke up. I am crying. It's finished. The whole thing is all over. My whole life was like this long corridor. There were hundreds of doors off the corridor. I opened every door, and every door led nowhere. I tried everything. Nothing works. Nothing works. What am I going to do? Finished! Whole marriage is going up in smoke. My whole life is going up in smoke. I want to tell you, it was very close. Again, it's not an exaggeration. This is serious stuff. It could have been at that moment, like the whole rest of my life, like in a, you know, padded cell. Like, finished. But I got this crazy thought. I'm crying in the middle of the night. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Could it be that... Nah. I mean, could there be something like God? God? What do you mean? God? What? Me, Roy Neuberger, believe in God? Are you crazy? I should believe in God? Well, I mean, like if you were a monk in the Middle Ages, all right. I mean, what do you know? You didn't know you couldn't read, you couldn't write. You lived in this total darkness. Fine, so you believe in God because you didn't know a thing. But this 20th century sophisticated guy, I should believe in God. Come on. But then I realized, if your life is falling apart, you need God. Oh, I need God. God, help me. Get me out of this. Get me out of this. Whoa. Maybe. Maybe God's real. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe that's the one door I never opened. I began to have hope. Maybe there was something. Maybe there is something. Maybe. Whoa. Maybe. All right. I'm willing to believe in God. I'm willing to believe in God. But. Oh, I want to tell you. But I'm not Jewish. No way. And I have a proof. I know Jews do not believe in God. How do I? I can prove it. I went to my friend's bar mitzvah. I remember the guy got up there. Bah, 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 bah. He had no clue what he's saying. Nobody in the room had a clue what he's saying. Then we all had roast beef. And we gave the guy a check in his beautiful bank account. Where's God? I mean, Jews believe in roast beef. Jews believe in bank accounts. I don't see God. Jews don't believe in God. Who believes in God? Who's a role model? Mahatma Gandhi, Dr. Martin Luther King. I mean, these are religious people. They are role model. So we had a professor from India. We started studying Hinduism with him. Then I got into Buddhism. And I got these Buddhist dream books. I used to wake myself up in the middle of the night every night, and I would try to remember my dream, which is very hard. I thought if you remember every detail of your dream, oh, you're going to find God, you're going to find whatever you're looking for. Beautiful, unbelievable. 3 years this went on, 3 years. End of 3 years, I'm like, wait a minute. I've been doing this for 3 years, and I'm the same as I was 3 years ago. Nothing happened over here. Besides that, what's the ultimate in Buddhism? You're sitting on the mountaintop and you're trying to achieve whatever they call it, mental perfection. I don't want to sit on a mountaintop. I'm a person. I'm married. I eat. I sleep. I walk. I talk. I can. I'm not going to spend my whole life contemplating on a mountaintop. So by this time, we were living in England. We were in Oxford University, Balliol College, Oxford. I was studying English language and literature. My wife was studying art at the Ashmolean Museum. We used to go around the continent, Paris, London, Rome, the Vatican, cathedrals, frescoes, statues. Oh, I mean, am I stupid or am I stupid? So obvious, Christianity, that's it. Pashit, like, no Shiloh. I started reading early church fathers, Saint this, Saint that, what? And I wrote a book. Oh, this was a book. I mean, talk about brilliant. The book was entitled, Why the Jews Are Wrong and the Christians Are Right. And this was, take it from me, really something. Beautiful, brilliant. A slight problem. Nobody wanted to publish my book. God, what are you doing to me? I write the most brilliant book in history and nobody wants to publish it. Now I look back, Baruch Hashem, nobody published the book. Not one word made any sense. I mean, I didn't know anything about Christianity. I didn't know anything about Judaism. But, you don't need to know anything to write a book. So you write it. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? We had to do something with our lives. We left England. We came back to America. We settled in a very beautiful town, about 60 miles north of New York City, called Cornwall on Hudson, near West Point, Bear Mountain. And there was a local weekly newspaper in this town. And it was for sale. So my parents helped me. And we bought the newspaper. And I became the publisher and editor. And I wanted to make it a great newspaper. And it was there is still to this day an organization called the National Newspaper Association, the association of all the weekly newspapers in America. The president at that time was an unbelievable Jewish guy. And with a famous name. His name was Walter Grunfeld. This is a nephew of Diane Grunfeld. He was a publisher in Binghamton, New York. He had three newspapers. And I used to love to hear him speak. He was a charismatic speaker, brilliant. One day I called him, Walter. Walter, maybe we can come up for a day and learn how to, make a great newspaper. Wonderful. He invited us. We came, spent the day with him. At the end of the day, time to drive home. We left Binghamton. We stopped first at his house for a cup of coffee. It was 6:30 at night. He wanted to watch the news. Turned on the TV. He was standing in front of the TV and he's crying. What was the news? It was October 1973, Yom Kippur War. Walter Grunfeld is crying. I can't believe it! A week ago, it was all over. Israel was finished. And look at this! I can't believe it. General Sharon just crossed the Suez Canal. They got the Egyptians surrounded. They're marching on Damascus. Israel saved. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. And I'm like, huh? What? Oh, yeah, right. Oh, I know about it. I know, yeah. I read in the paper, sure. There's a war in the Middle East. I know, sure. And Walter Grunfeld starts screaming at me. What kind of a Jew are you? What are you made of, stone? Don't you have a heart? What kind of a Jew are you? What? kind of a Jew are you? I don't know. Nobody ever asked me that before. What kind of a Jew are you?
Whoa. I don't know. I was 31 years old.
I realized I studied everything in the entire world, heard thousands of brilliant lectures and read thousands of books. The only one thing I knew zero, knew nothing about. What kind of a Jew are you? Whoa. I don't know. We had two children at that time, two girls, one 5 and one 3. The 5-year-old was about to go into first grade. We're going to register her at the Bishop Dunn Catholic School in Newburgh, New York. That's where all the Jewish families from that town sent their kids because, you know, it's the best school. So you will send your, you know, you want the best education for your child. And she used to ask us, you know, about God and religion and stuff, and no answers. No answers. And that kept going through my head. What kind of a Jew are you? What kind of Jew are you? We had an advertiser on the paper. Beautiful guy, Jewish guy, owned a hardware store in our town, Cornwall. Bob Ushman. I was talking to him one day, Bob, you know, I'm 31. I was never inside a synagogue in my life, you know. What do they do there? You want to check it out someday? Yeah, sure. So he called me that night. You know, Thursday night, we have this speaker coming. This woman evangelist, whatever, you know, Rebbetzin, whatever that means. You want to come? I said, yeah, sure. And that's how we met Rebbetzin Esther Young-Rice. March 74. It's unbelievable when you think about it, because how Hashem, everything is timed to the microsecond, you know? A week earlier, like, not interested. At that moment, I had tried every single thing in the world I could think of, and there was nothing left. Except one thing. So we went and we heard Rebbetzin Young-Rice speak. And what did she speak about? You are a Jew. You stood at Har Sinai. Hashem gave you a Torah. Believe me, nothing esoteric. We're descended from kings and prophets. We have a Torah. Shabbos, Kashrus, Taras HaMishpacha. We descend. We taught the world morality. Do not kill, do not steal. We taught the world. We taught the world that there is such a thing as Hashem. There's a God. Whoa. What? How come you never heard this before? I never heard this before. My wife and I looked at each other like, whoa. This is like, I don't know. Nobody ever said this before. We were so awestruck, couldn't speak to her. But the next morning I woke up, I don't know, I got to follow up over here. So we wrote a letter, dear Rebbetzin, so if this is true what you said, like, there's got to be a next step, right? What do you do? How do you? At that time, she was beginning her career, and she used to have classes in the Syrian shul on Ocean Parkway in Brooklyn, Shari Tzion. A little room in the back, on the second floor. Come to my weekly Torah class of the Torah portion of the week. So that was 2 hours drive. Just want to give you the scenario over here. After Yom Kippur War, there was an oil embargo from the Middle East. Gas was rationed. You could only buy gas every other day, and you could only buy so much. So you had to figure out how far you had to go, and that was it. And if you ran out of gas, you ran out of gas. 2-hour drive each way. That's a lot of gas. and it was Tuesday night. My paper came out Wednesday morning. I used to spend all Tuesday night putting the paper together, personally. Forget it! Okay, not going. What do you mean not going? Life and death, are you kidding? What do you mean, how can we not go? We gotta go. So I started getting up 2 in the morning. By 5 in the afternoon, I was finished with the paper. My wife picked me up, and we used our gas. And we drove to Brooklyn. And that became like Shabbos for us. The whole week used to revolve around that night. Oh, wow, I don't believe this. These people really have a whole thing going over here. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. A few months later, Rabbi Zinyangreis got a call from Yerushalayim, IDF. We want you to come and speak to the soldiers. They need chizuk. They need chizuk. No, she didn't want to go. Like, people told her, are you kidding? They're going to throw tomatoes at you. Talk about Hashem to the soldiers. Forget it. They kept calling, please come. That's unbelievable. I don't know who in the IDF was, but they did. After a while, okay, I'm coming. And she brought a group with her. Now, I never wanted to go to Israel. Are you kidding? They stole us from the Arabs. I mean, why would I go to Israel, you know? We were learning. We were learning Torah. We were learning Chumash. We heard the Rashi. First Rashi in Bereishis. I don't have to tell you what it is, but I'll tell you what it is. Bereishis Bara Elokim. Rashi is. Why is the Torah begin with Bereishis? It's a book of laws. It's not a law. Creation, Shemaya of Arts, not a law. Rashi answers the question. There's going to come a time when the world's going to say to the nations of the world, are going to say to us, Listim Atem, you are thieves. You stole the land of Israel. And how are we going to answer that question? We're going to hold up this book, which they claim to believe in. It says here in this book, Hashem, Bereishis Bara Elokim, Hashem created the world. He's the boss, the Balabayas. And give it to whoever he wants to. He gave it to Abraham Yitzchak. Gave Eretz Yisrael to Abraham Yitzchak Yaakov and their children. That's our deed to the land. Wait a minute. Maybe we want to go. I feel like I'm connected over there. So in June 1974, we go to the airport. Now, you know, when normal people go on a trip, they leave at 9 in the morning and, you know, they whatever, put everything in the minivan and they're off, right? Jews, when do they leave? Midnight. You go to Kennedy Airport, you get on El Al and you leave. It's middle of the night. What is going on here? You're wiped out. You go to sleep at 4 in the morning. These guys are getting up and they are putting boxes on their heads. What's going on over here? First time in my life I ever saw Talis and Tefillin on El Al, 31 years old. Like, I think I've been missing something. What's going on? 2 weeks in Israel. First Shabbos of our lives, Kibbutz Lavi in the Galil, all those years in the peace movement, we never had a moment of peace. Oh, Shabbos. You can have peace in the world. It's unbelievable. The first time I ever breathed in my life was Shabbos. Whoa. Amazing. Somebody given Rabbi Zinyangreis a pair of tefillin to give to somebody who needs. I got the tefillin. She took my wife to the mikveh in Yerushalayim after 11 years of marriage. The ladies in the mikveh were crying, couldn't believe it. 2 weeks living like Jews. Came back to America. Cornwall on Hudson, New York. What is this place? We are out of here. Forget it. What are we doing here? Sold the business, sold our home. We're moving to North Woodmere, New York, to Rebbetzin's husband, Rabbi Young Rice, the Rav. That's it. That's it. Rosh Hashanah, 38 years ago. This is time of year we moved, bought a house, 2 blocks from the shul, 2 blocks from the rabbi. We're jumping in. We tried everything. It's all gone. Nothing. There's nothing there. It's so obvious. This is what we've been looking for. Instead of going to the Bishop Dunn parochial school, Catholic school, our daughter was enrolled in La Havdol Torah Academy for Girls in Far Rockaway. They didn't want to let her in. Why? She didn't know a thing. She's 5 years old, doesn't know Aleph Beis. And her husband and her parents didn't know Aleph Beis. I mean, these little guys, I don't have to tell you, the little five-year-old girls, you know, you go to Shabbos and they have a five-year-old girl, she stands up in the chair and she tells you a whole parsha backwards and forwards, everything that goes on, medrash, this, that, every, all of them a farsha. Yom Tov Shabbos. We didn't know a thing, she didn't know a thing. No, we can't take her. So Rebbetzin Young Rice had to bang on the door, talk to the principal. Baruch Hashem, she had a hard first year. By the time she graduated high school, she was the valedictorian of her class. And today, she lives, that's the one who lives in Beit El. Where are we going? We see Neve Yaakov on the way. Baruch Hashem with a beautiful family. Decided this is it. We're jumping and we had to learn. We, Aleph Beis, took a course with Rabbi Young Rice. 10 weeks, learned to read, we learned to write. Like babies. I had to have a bris. I had a medical circumcision at Lenox Hill Hospital in Manhattan. That ain't a bris. So, have to have a bris. 31 years old. I want to tell you, I was nervous. It was in Rabbi Young Rice, Rebbetzin Young Rice's father's living room in Canarsie, Brooklyn. And, you understand, a little nervous. So they hand me, here, you, take this. I do believe I am the only Jew in the history of the world who ever had a bris while he was reading the Daily News. It didn't really penetrate too much, probably good. But, Baruch Hashem, it happened. We all got Jewish names. Roy became Yisrael. Linda became Leah, Susan became Sarah, Juliet became Yaffa, who is now, by the way, married to Rebbetzin Young Rice's son. She's now also Rebbetzin Young Rice. And then we want to have more children because we found out there's a life! It's not just darkness. Baruch Hashem, we had Miriam Basia, Aaron Yaakov, Nachama Bracha, Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. We had to have a chuppah. When we got married the first time, no rabbi, oh no, not me. But I want a leader of the Ethical Culture Society who is, you know, according to the state of New York, is a quote-unquote clergyman. But my wife's grandfather said, no, you have to have a rabbi. You can't get married without a rabbi. Okay, so I see I'm going to lose this one. So I have to make a compromise. So we looked for the most reformed rabbi we could find. Like super. This guy was practically like a Catholic priest, you know. And I told him, listen, no Hebrew in the ceremony. I mean, hear the insanity? Like, what's the problem, man? Why you say one word of Hebrew? Like, I'm gonna break out in hives. Talk about sinner for Torah. One word I did not want to hear. One word of Hebrew. And he it was fine. He obliged. As someone said to me the other night, he probably didn't know one word of Hebrew, so whatever. Anyway. No chuppah. no kasuba. He had a piece of paper that said, I am my beloved and my beloved is mine. And there was space for two quote unquote witnesses to sign. Nobody signed. So we had to have a chuppah. We had a chuppah. Rabbi Young Grace made a chuppah. Baruch Hashem, we had a minyan. We decided not to invite our two daughters, 5 and 3, to the chuppah. But we didn't want them to go to school the next day. Say, my mommy and daddy got married last night. So, Baruch Hashem. New life. I'll tell you, just for kids, sir. The first Shabbos, we're there. New home, packing boxes, everything. Rebbetzin Young Rice calls. I just want to tell you, Yisrael, I invited 3 people to your home for Shabbos. What? What are you talking about? What do you mean? I don't know how to make Shabbos. I don't know how to make Kiddush. I don't know how to do anything. How can you? I'm like, take it easy. Calm down already. Calm down. First of all, I want to tell you, you know, you think you know nothing. You're right. You know nothing. They know minus. They know less than you. So they're going to be very happy. They won't be nervous. They won't be afraid. They'll, you know, like drink out from the wrong side of the wine cup, something. You have a question, what to do? The rabbi lives 2 blocks away. And I want to tell you something else also. You know, somebody went out of their way for you. You think it's just a picnic and you go, no, no. You have to learn. You have to go out now for someone else also. They'll have a good time. And you'll have a good time. And Baruch Hashem, it worked out. Who was the couple? Unbelievable. With their son. A Christian minister and his wife. With a little shinui. A yid. He'd been in the army. The missionaries got to him. And he couldn't, quote unquote, converted. And he became not just a so-called Christian. He became a minister. And he was like trying to convert Jews. And he made the quote-unquote mistake of going to the Pineview Hotel the previous summer. And he was just with his young disciple, who happened to be a Kohen, tried to convert Rebbetzin Young Rice to Christianity. And backfired a little. He said, before Shabbos, you know, Rebbetzin, we want to talk to you. Oh, wonderful, great. Just, you know, it's almost Shabbos. So I'll tell you what, we'll have Shabbos, and after Shabbos, we'll talk. Okay, fine. That's all that was needed. Shabbos did the job. This minister sitting around the Rebbetzin's father, long beard, Shalom Aleichem. All of a sudden he began to remember. He was a little boy, also Shalom Aleichem. It all came back to him. By the end of Shabbos, threw all his books away. Well, I will tell you, it took a long time. Really, 26 years later, after that Shabbos, he came to us. He wrote to Rebbetzin Young Rice, I finally became Shomer Mitzvahs. His disciple, the Kohen, moved in with us right away. Baruch Hashem. He did tshuva. Found a shidduch for him. Baruch Hashem today is a beautiful Jewish family. And we started having Shabbos guests. And many of you, I'm not recommending you return. People come to leave Yerushalayim. But if anyone's in New York and you want to come for Shabbos, our cards are here. You're always welcome to come for Shabbos. We have people live with us. And that's how it all began. Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. Unbelievable. I just want to end with a few thoughts, very few minutes, really, going through Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And this is, sorry, I just noticed. Yeah, the book was backwards, right? Okay, got it. Not an ordinary year. It's not an ordinary year. I think everybody has a pretty easy time agreeing that we are not in ordinary times right now. This is my third book, 2020 Vision. Baruch Hashem, just want to tell you, big simcha. 2 days ago it came out in its 5th language in French. Just came out in French. It's Mitzvah Shem coming out in Russian in a few weeks. I want to read to you the very beginning. Take a few minutes, 3, 4, 5 minutes. This is how the book begins. This is the backdrop for 2020 Vision. It's a mice, it's a story. We call it a novel for lack of a better word. This is the Malbim on Yecheskel Navi, Perek Lamed Beis. In the end of days, after the children of Israel have returned to their land, the children of Yishmael and the children of Esav will unite to attack Yerushalayim. Not me, this is the Malbim. They will form a world coalition against the tiny nation of Israel. Just want to stop for 1 second. You know, you want to try and understand what's going on in the world. People read the newspapers. I don't, but people do. TV, whatever, magazines. Zero clarity. Sheker, mud. No clarity. You get nothing from this. You want to understand what's going on in the world? The Malbim, the Navi, the Chumash, the Gemara. The only way you're going to find out what's... Look at this! This is an exact portrait of today's world! I'll read the last sentence again. They will form a world coalition against the tiny nation of Israel. Cheskel Navi, thousands of years ago. Today. But something hopeless, right? Hopeless! Hundreds of millions of people and we're the tiniest nation. But something will go wrong with their plan. It's not me again, it's the Malbim. The religious beliefs of the children of Yishmael and the children of Esav will clash. And the two nations will collide and destroy each other. 2 days ago was 9/11. What happened 9/11? Why did they fly a plane into the World Trade Center? Is that crazy? Of course, it's totally wacko. Crazy. Yecheskel and Navi, thousands of years ago, he said it was going to happen. The two nations, this is Yishmael and Esav, the Muslims and the entire Western world, will collide and destroy each other. This is what is referred to as the War of Gog and Magog. Following this cataclysmic conflict, the final redemption of the Jewish people will occur with the coming of Mashiach ben David. That is the background of this book. The action takes place against that backdrop. We're coming to Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. I think it's pretty clear big things are going to be decided every year. I don't, Chas v'Shalom, I should imply anything different, but you could see it all coming together right now. Our tefillahs. I don't know. Life and death. And I want to tell you, if there is one ticket to survival in whatever is coming to this world, it's not gas masks and it's not shelters. It's a certain kind of... It's right here. It's called the Beis Medrash. Only thing... The only ticket for survival is Torah. That's it. The only thing that ever kept us alive, ever made us alive. You heard my story. I ran. I tried to run away from it. There is nothing out there. I could have done everything and I did everything. And there is zero. I ate at the most famous, glamorous, expensive restaurants in Paris. I mean, whatever. Kohelis. I mean, whatever. Everything you do, everything. And it's zero. There is nothing there. All the cell phones, the computers, everything, all the fancy cars in the world, it's all gone. garnished! Zero! It means nothing! In the world of Mashiach, Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah V'Hashem Rishalayim, it's all going to be, it's going to vanish like smoke. It's all nothing. It's all sheker. Garnished. And every word of Gemara, every word of Torah that we learn, that's the only thing that has any existence whatsoever. And you guys are doing it. You're sitting here in your Shalayim Ir HaKodesh and you're learning Torah. And you are enabling the world to survive, and you should know that. You're enabling the world to survive. It only survives because Yidden are sitting and learning Torah. That's it. There's no other reason. It's you, your survival and the survival of the whole world. That's all. So I just want to end with a bracha. Hashem should bless us. And we should see that beautiful world of Mashiach ben David. Because it's very close. Rav Moshe Shapiro Shlita told me a few years ago, we're not going to have to wait till 2020. Not going to have to wait till 2020. Very close. We should all see it. And you know, we get so jaded and cynical from this Gaiish civilization that surrounds us. We don't believe there could really be a perfect world. But it's going to be a perfect world. Leave it to Hashem. He knows what to do. We should all live in it. And life could be perfect and happy. Don't have to be afraid. Don't have to have sorrows, emotional stress, money, sickness, health problems, family problems. Bez Hashem soon. World of Mashiach. Beis HaMikdash. It's real. Bez Hashem, we should see it very soon. Thank you so much. If whoever made the tape, if I could have a copy if it comes out, I'd love to have you. I'll give you my email. I'd love to have you.